Hello and welcome to Keyframes in Betweens, a mini podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton. With me today is Andy.
Hi.
And Duncan.
Hey there.
With substantially less enthusiasm than in our last episode, where we covered a shit posty comedy anime that's an institution.
Whoa, Shin-chan is not shit posty at all. But it is an institution.
He literally pulls down his pants and spanks his butt and wiggles his little
child penis
around. That's
just childish behavior.
Okay, whatever.
That's just...
Speaking of childish,
tonight
but not
on Key
fun.
Friends, when does fun childish behavior end and shit posting begin?
Yeah. Anyway, as promised, we're doing a tween on Panty and Stocking in honor of the new series of Panty and Stocking. I guess technically Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt, the racially questionable head of their little micro-organization. Mm. This is a American cartoon-inspired comedy anime from 2010, directed by Hiroyuki Imaishi, fresh off of Gurren Lagann. And I think the concept creator, series composition, is Hiromi Wakabayashi, mm-hmm. although most of the writing is credited to, what do they call themselves? Geek Fleet, mm-hmm. which is just apparently the whole team at Gainax.
I thought it was also, there's also another studio, a smaller production studio that also helped, I believe. I could be wrong.
Not in the main credits, so okay. I don't know.
There was a studio which helped with the 3D, but I know.
That's the one I'm thinking of, the 3D studio.
Okay. We'll be talking about that too, because yeah. increasing reliance on 3D as that show goes on. Anyway, I personally passed this up at the time because I was never a fan of like turn of the millennium Cartoon Network gross out humor. Mm-hmm. But these guys clearly are, and I feel vindicated in having passed on this. We'll talk more about it because I do think there are some very impressive and interesting things going on. But holy shit, was this like night and day from watching a Crayon Shin-chan movie.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You took a plunge on me for the second time and I really fucking pulled a stinker.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt slightly bad, but then I was also thinking like, nah, fuck that. Like, people genuinely love Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt. And even when I was like, mentioning to my friends like, oh, we're watching Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt, they're like, oh yeah, that's good, like it's well produced, it's it's funny, it's, you know, it's memorable. I'm like, nah, okay.
Maybe two of those three. Yeah. 1.5 of those three. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, when I first tried watching it back in 2010, mm-hmm. I bounced off it real fucking hard. And then Mids actually was the one who's like, oh no, I quite like this was fun, I enjoyed it. And so I was like, oh, maybe I'm wrong on that. I don't think I am. I really, I don't know. Like, I didn't hate it the second time. Like, when I recontextualized it, it's sort of like it trying to be, you know, this weird, like, comedy on and this parody of American Cartoon Network-esque style. Like, two things came to mind. Realization is one that it's just like, it's not the kind of parody I was expecting. And that's the first feeling when I watched it the first time, and I was like, yeah, I still feel that is the case. And the second one is just like, man, I really don't like Cartoon Network shows.
Yeah, whenever I had to explain this to people, because you say, oh, people are like, oh, what are you watching for your podcast? I'm like, oh, I'm dragging myself through Panty and Stocking, and people either know what you're talking about or they look at you because you're just naming female undergarments, which is is a bad look.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's just, for me, it's a very like 2000s take of like, what if they took shits on Dexter's Lab? What if the Powerpuff Girls fucked? Wouldn't that be so like transgressive and wild and rad? And like, it is for one episode, and then there's then there's 13 more episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I should also say, like, as the show continues, there is a turning point. Episode 6, Les Diaboliques, when they introduce the other two sort of like anti-protagonists.
The Demon Sisters.
The Demon Sisters, Scanty and Nisok.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's actually when I was like, okay, maybe there is something more enjoyable here. And I do feel that, like, that is kind of a turning point where it's like, yeah, there's some entertainment here to be had. I enjoyed it when they came in.
I would say, Andy, what did it turn to? So I feel like there's no deviation in it. So it was just like...
But for one, I like the Demon Girls' vocal fries and the rules always made me kind of like smile.
Good performances, yeah.
To be fair, the vocal performances in all the characters is pretty good, I feel.
Like, yeah, Maria Ise is out there just earning her meal ticket again and again as Stocking, I felt.
But I don't know. I feel that Arisa Arisa Ogasawara, the voice actress for Panty, also like really fucking went for it. I loved her angry voice and curtness and crudeness. This wasn't on Crunchyroll for a very long time, and it only happened recently when Funimation merged with them. I actually bought the Blu-ray DVD thing on HMV, and they had... What the fuck, Duncan? You've ruined my fucking... What?
The Wikipedia suggests that otherwise that it aired on Crunchyroll in 2011.
There were weird rights things because of Gainax turning into a shell company, and Trigger got their license back in 2022, and I think that's why it made a reappearance.
I don't know, regardless. There were some extras on the fucking DVD. That's what I'm going to get at. I bought the Blu-ray DVDs.
So
there were some extras. One of the extras was one of the talks from the VAs. Some of them was from the English VAs. Like, I gave a fuck about that. But the one bits that were from the Japanese VAs was Arisa being like, yeah, like, this person wanted to record me coming at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And I felt really, and I was like, this is not how I feel. And I was like, no, she had to act a lot of sex out. And I felt sorry for her, and she did a good job. And every recording, she was like, I really want a beer now.
It's interesting to talk about that, because I do think that, like, this is a show that showed, especially the first few episodes, showed an incredible amount of technical proficiency, the pastiche that's going on of, like, the very, like, I don't know how I'd call them, but like smooth designs, like all the lines blend into each other and merge. And there's not, it's not like a person built out of shapes. It's a person built out of a shape that they've like cut parts out of.
It's like stylized, but it's not missing like the features of that person.
And watching those move around, like watching the distortion, because a big thing that Imaishi says is that like he wanted to make an homage to Yoshinori Kanata, who is a like very distinctive animator who is known for often like purposely like using action to like take characters off model. And that's like one of his big signatures, is like distortion and like truthful drawings that are like quick and all in one. And they want to make a whole show in addition to wanting to like show their inspirations from the sheer transgressiveness of Drawn Together. I'll post a link to the web archived interview, this guy who interviewed the Gainax team when they visited Pixar, and that blog died around 2015, but we still have the transcripts from the Wayback Machine, which is how I found out that the Powerpuff Girls and like Dexter's Lab stuff came later. It was because they had seen they'd seen Drawn Together and like, wow, they let Americans do anything with their cartoons. We should do that. But for Japanese cartoons with off model, like crude art and the crude humor too. But yes, to contrast like the technical proficiency with just a deeply of its time sense of humor, like very mean spirited, very like, lol, this is repetitive, lol, nothing matters that happens in a given episode, everything will reset. Before Space Dandy, they did that everyone gets turned into zombies, and then they just end the episode and don't really reference what happened again, which I thought was funny enough, although the actual episode itself, that was when I first noticed that both Panty and Stocking say like shit and bitch, and it's like Korowa fucking hell, and I'm just like, oh no. So yeah, it's a mixed experience, and unfortunately I think that it being in these like 10 minute half episodes made it pretty tedious to binge, especially until the plot emerged. But it reminded me a lot of last episode of the podcast we recorded, where I complained about Tenchi Universe, that when it was episodic I was like, god, a plot needs to show up and give this show direction, and then the plot showed up and I was like, wait, no, bring back the episodic content. I liked that. I liked it better when they had to destroy Panty accidentally made a sex tape thinking it was a movie, and they had to go around the world destroying all the sex tapes. That's probably my favorite episode.
My favorite episodes, I think, my favorite episodes was The Vomiting Point. Really like that one.
Well, I like that one because that was a like art style switch too, which was nice when that happened.
And I tried to look up who the character art and the direction of that was, and it's really familiar. The name of it is escaping me.
I mean, it looks really similar to some of the stuff which was done for...
I mean, it kind of looks like Ping Pong. It kind of looks like Tekkonkinkreet.
Yeah, Yuasa, Satoshi Kon, various like artsy anime designs.
And it was just nice in all this sort of like sea of playground humor to have an episode that's actually pretty fucking dark and sad. And then it ends on like a happy moment, but it's just kind of like a miserable experience. And I'm like, this is what, when they do shorts like this is what you get On the flip side, you also get the fucking Chuck to the Future three-part shorts, which made me want to shoot myself. That was fucking abysmal. I hated
that
stuff.
You don't think it's funny that Chuck has a little guy that lives inside his head that fucks a little girl that lives inside the...
No, I don't.
I mean, you guys have both watched anime short compilations, and you know like how hit and miss those things are. Like, if you're lucky to get like two or three
per... Yeah, but there was three of them in a row, and they're all the same joke.
Okay, yes, and that's
and
the problem.
And they're all bad.
I feel sorry for those animators, because they're like just thrown in. They're just like, okay, character we haven't developed at all... You got 5 minutes.
Yeah, tell some jokes about the Invader Zim dog. Like, yeah. Go for it.
But this is the other thing. Like, it's clearly this is a predecessor to Space Patrol Lilico and Space Dandy.
Inferno Cop.
I forgot about Inferno Cop. But I feel like Inferno Cop is a bit different from Space Dandy, because Space Dandy is not only is it different directors, different animators, different writers, but also it's different art styles. In many ways, the same as Rinchi Eduka-chan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they could imprint their own art style. Whilst I feel that this isn't the case of Panty and Stocking, I feel that there is actually most of the writing crew are the same. Most of the animation crew are the same. And there's very little guest animators who come in. And I feel that that's the other problem, is it's just like, it means that you just get the same. The writing is... I get that there's some untranslatable Japanese puns. Like, Daten City is apparently a pun on Fallen Angel.
Yeah, Datenshi.
Yeah, Datenshi, yeah. But all the jokes are just sort of like, wouldn't it be funny if this character just, like you said, like, just say fuck. Just say fuck again.
Yeah.
And say fuck and shit and fuck again, and then have some vomit, and then have Panty have sex. Like, that would be funny. And I was like, I...
What if Stocking dates a really gross ghost who treats her poorly and farts a lot?
But
it turns out they're actually in love. Owned so much.
I like that episode because it shows a side of Stocking that is like, she
Fair
does
enough.
Want love. She does want a relationship. It was actually quite sweet, and it was surrounded by like this gross out layer, but like it had a sweet core to it, a sweet sentimentality that actually I enjoyed, because it was notably different from everything else, which the whole point was like, we don't care about anything. We're just going to shoot stuff and say fucking shit, and then I'm going to have sex and go home.
Yeah, it makes me... I didn't actually go back and check, but, like, the level of, like, mean-spiritedness and callous violence and pointless crudity and profanity... I know I sound like an old man. Granted, like, I did just get a year older a few days ago, but...
Glad you introduced the new year watching this show, I bet.
Yeah, really, really getting 39 off to a great start with this. But, like, just the mean-spiritedness, like, I really enjoyed on an intellectual level, like, how, especially the early episodes, there'd be, like, lots of little, like, animation gags and, like, someone doing a pratfall in the far background. But so much of it was just, like, Chuck having his brain splattered out or having, like, a random person die horribly. There's a point where they pull up and, like, a little groundhog pops out of a crack in the pavement and they just smear him into, like, a bloody mess of bone and viscera. And, like, it's weird that that used to be, like, considered humor. It's just, like, watch something awful happen to this innocent creature that doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
It feels very pre-YouTube in a way, where we've all, like, kind of been deadened to just, like, the ubiquity of casual violence.
I disagree, man. Like, I think it's a classic Happy Tree Friends thing, right?
But when is Happy Tree Friends?
Died in 99. 2007, it had...
So, yeah.
Like...
It's that spirit of the turn of the millennium, where just, like, kind of coming out of 90s nihilism into like 2000s hyper everything is how we eventually do get what, again, that interview says is like the inciting incident is them celebrating after Gurren Lagann and just talking about all the stuff that they want to be able to like get past the censors, and they hold up like Drawn Together as this like example of like, here's all the rad gross shit that we wish we could do in an anime. If we make it a parody of an American anime, we have a better chance of getting it past everybody. And that's not exactly what happened, but it feels like it. And I think it's borne out because like,
yeah,
but it's so funny that it's just that specific thing though. Cause like there is the Transformers episode, Transhomers episode.
Transformers.
And during the volleyball thing, they briefly turn into South Park animation, but like a lot of anime does that as like a brief gag, but otherwise they don't really use like different art styles to evoke different cartoons. It's kind of just stuck in this circa 2003, it's the classic, like, when do the movie characters go to the bathroom? After the scene cuts, they had sex. Wouldn't it be hilarious if we saw them have sex and then fart? Ugh, just, yeah.
It's Like, the other thing, though, about the character designs, I really like them. The character design of Panty and Stocking are fucking great. They're so unique and visually identifiable. Even when Panty changes her costume, every episode she's wearing something different. Stocking has different costumes as well, but generally has the same goth Lolita vibe. Those character designs are fucking great. They're so unique and identifiable, and I absolutely love them. Even Chuck and Gartabelt, Scanty and Knee-High, and the mayor, like, they're all such great character designs that I genuinely love. And then I'm just disheartened when it doesn't go anywhere and doesn't do anything.
It's ripping off bad American cartoons as a joke, as a shitpost. And it's really weird to have to analyze that, like, as art on our podcast, but that's the mission that we've undertaken.
But then also, like, just like you mentioned South Park, like, I feel that's also another great touchstone, because South Park, sure, there's a lot of gross out comedy in South Park, but behind South Park, there's also a lot of, like, genuine, like, politics and statements of stuff that they want to say, which makes not only the jokes hit harder and be funnier, but also, like, give them a meaning and a point and something that sticks into your brain, because the member berries are like Trump or whatever.
It's interesting, because I do think that, like, South Park often has, like, we don't believe in anything, everyone's stupid as a, like, rhetorical stance. But I think usually the conclusion of the better episodes is that there is actually one side that's worse, or there is one decision that's, like, more harmful or less harmful. And I don't think it's, like, you don't learn lessons while you watch South Park, but you do, like, the characters believe things and do stuff. And, like, Panty and Stocking, I don't even really understand why Stocking got to go back to heaven, but Panty didn't at the end, like, because she was having too much sex.
Well, A, because of the sick reveal at the end of the show, and B, I feel that Stocking was the actual one killing the demons, and Panty was just having sex. So, yeah, she was having sex, but it was more, I felt, because Stocking was actually, like, killing and exterminating demons and getting the H coins, heaven coins, which, again, is, a joke.
Yeah. But as far as the word joke can go, yes. It's just like when it suddenly is just like, oh, one of these characters succeeded and one of these characters failed. And I was like, really? Because I thought that it was kind of just about, like, nothing happening. There's literally an episode where they sit on the couch the whole episode and don't do anything besides eat food.
Best episode.
Yeah. I don't know. And that's Duncan's favorite episode.
I think partly, I wonder if that worked more for me because of everything that had come before. So we're getting constant action and references thrown at you. When we were talking about Crayon Shin-chan last time, one of the things which came up was that sometimes really successful slapstick shows just keep throwing things at you, like keep throwing jokes at you into one hits. And I think this show does it, but somehow misses so much that it tends to just drown you in miss and you don't remember the hits.
Yeah.
And this half episode was a lot more just back and forth banter rather than trying to get a hit. And so it was more enjoyable because it was just the good VA performances and a few quick sight jokes. And that was just kind of like just hanging out with them for a bit rather than being.
And it showed that also they actually do like each other, which has been the contention for.
Which is not easily seen. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and you only see the moments where they're at the highest, like, we got to murder these fucking monsters or whatever. And yeah, like, I do agree. It was a nice, chill moment.
I enjoyed it in isolation, but it comes after the midpoint of the core. We get the Chuck shorts. We get a music video where there's not even lip syncing.
Oh my God.
We get the couch gag, which is often just like blocking actual movement and just people talking from off screen with a still on stuff. And I just like, when your main thing that you're appreciating is just the technical proficiency of the art and just suddenly watching a bunch of like, okay, we've outpaced our budget, time to like put the drag on with all these like filler items. And it wouldn't have been something that would have bothered me if I hadn't already, like, broken up with the anime in the first few episodes. But it was just like, oh, haha, it's a couch episode. But also, this is, like, the fourth cost-cutting measure that I've noticed in the past few episodes. And it's just kind of like, well, if the whole idea is that you're going to be doing, like, American cartoons with lowbrow humor but an incredibly high, like, technical ceiling, it kind of sucks to have like the slowdown episode, even if it does provide characterization for these angels, these fallen angels who aren't really characters. One likes sex, one likes food. They have a priest who's their boss, and he's pretty funny, even though his character design is pretty racially charged by certain standards.
God, I don't know if it's just the world's thankfully moved on more since 2010, but God, that's a racist trope.
Yeah, the afro and the big fat lips, it's rough.
Oh, he's a reformed pimp working for God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ex-gangster died, and then he found God.
Yeah, I didn't really have much of a problem with him. I thought, I feel that my issue with him wasn't that, you can design a character to look that way, but I just didn't think the way that he presented was that racially charged until you went to his backstory and he was like a priest and a pimp, and then I was like, okay, yeah, this is kind of just like a classic black person story.
The two jobs you can have as a black person are a preacher or a sex worker.
Yeah, the thing that was more shocking, I guess, was when you meet the other fucking brief and there's a very clear joke that Gartabelt took him off to sort of try to be a predator type.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, okay, that is tasteless. I didn't think that his character design necessarily was tasteless.
It just doesn't look good. But you're absolutely right that there is so much crudity and pointless offense being offered in this anime that a bad black character or lazy tropey black character is not even the most objectionable thing that happens in the course of a given episode.
But at least he's given a character, and he's given he's given character. He's given.
We know more about him than we.
Yeah, we know more about him than we know about the others. I actually liked his backstory episode where it was he's undead and he's going through the whole of the fucking world and he's constantly trying to work out what this key means and these messages. He's trying to avoid God. I thought that was good, and then he eventually moved towards it. That is character, that is growth, that is,
yeah, that's fair.
It's more than just a pastiche.
I do wonder if there's actually much more to him than just the recycled Wandering Jew story. Feels like just that's the trope and they just the start point
coming from Gainax too.
Yeah. They just use that for a start point, added on the pimp backstory, and there you go. That's all there is.
Well,
to
and him. Also he loves a bit of S&M, which is
his Gartabelt. It never even occurred to me until at the end of the show that oh yeah,
yeah,
he's wearing fishnet stockings with a garter belt because his name's Gartabelt. I just tuned it out. Why is Chuck the only one who doesn't have a funny name? I'm just so confused.
Yeah.
They have another one that's Knickers or something. Fastener.
It's just the name for the little metal bit. It can be called a Chuck. That's it.
I never
heard. Oh, right. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
That's just the name of that part of a zipper.
Yeah.
There you go. Ka-ching.
I don't know. The highlights for me were when Scantney and Kneesocks came on. Because when they came on, you actually got an idea that there is a bigger plot that they're trying to move towards, and B, that there's at least some equivalent force that they're playing up against.
You mean an identical force?
Yeah, identical, but it's still something different. And this is the other thing I realized. I really fucking hate Monster of the Week shows.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You fucked up offering us to watch this one, Ben, because, jeez.
Overall, I was lukewarm to pretty much all of it. Occasionally, it will give me a chuckle. And then most of the time, I just feel empty inside. But I didn't feel bad. I didn't feel bad about recommending this because a lot of people like this show. I know it's like a short sight in my knowledge, and as far as Gainax, rest in peace, shows go, it feels like one that generally has gotten the more love out of all of the other Netflix shows. Gainax shows.
Guyflix.
Yeah.
For me also, it's a big blind spot, and I guess I am glad on an abstract level that I don't have this fastidiousness that makes me want to avoid this show just because I don't care about the thing that it's a pastiche of, and I don't like gross out humor, even though I did not enjoy it. But I do wonder if it's just binging it. It's the thing we always ask, if we was watching one episode a week, would I be as utterly exhausted with these repetitive characters who always do the crudest or most violent thing? Because my girlfriend walked in and out a couple times, and I expected her to hate this because, I mean, she takes off her panties and it turns into a gun, and it's just kind of very Freudian in an unfun way. But I think it did the pastiche well enough that it was kind of just like walking into the room while someone's watching, you know, some Genndy Tartakovsky cartoon or something. Just like, oh, hey, huh? She likes slapstick. And there is decent slapstick. And I think the art style really plays towards that. And when we have the early episodes, like the car chase one, or even like the poop one, which, God, if this was just me watching it on my own, I probably would have not moved on beyond that first episode, because really leading with strong material is like, what if a plumber died smothered by poop and therefore possessed all the poop in the city? Yay! But her, like, the less she consumed, it felt like the more funny she found it, because she just walk in and would just, you know, see one of them kick Chuck and he just pinballs like 28 times around all the walls and then splats into a pile of purple goo. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's funny. And you don't have to, like, assemble it into an episode in your head. You just watch a funny bit of animation that's well done.
And I feel this is kind of the problem with the humor, is that it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I just want to mention this for South Park, but, like, the humor in Panty and Stocking is, like, gross out and... it's just gross out humor and vulgarity.
And violence.
And violence. And saying fuck once is funny and if it's in the right place. Like, swearing is funny in the right place. But, like, they were just saying it all the time and it just loses that comical value every week. Every episode, you're just like, do people really laugh every time someone says fuck? I don't think so.
12-year-olds do, 100%. Yeah. What are you talking like? But then that's weird because you have that in an episode that has, like, a lot of more explicit sexuality than you often see even in, like, horny anime.
And it's
kind of a weird thing.
I would like to make a counterpoint to all this, which is that the amount of sex and violence this show has actually probably has, and foul sex and foul language in particular, is probably far more representative of most people's everyday lives than 99% of shows, because most people swear like...
I feel that the sex isn't representative, and this is kind of like...
She had sex with 1,000 men, Duncan.
1,000 men. But, like, this, like, yes, people have sex, Duncan, of course. It's more it's more accurate than other animes where they don't have sex, but also most of the other animes that we watch, they are underage, so... What the fuck are they doing, like, showing them?
I watched an episode of VTuber just before this, Andy, and, like, it was after watching Panty and Stocking, it was amazing. Well, not amazing, but it was interesting how VTuber is very much, this is performative horniness and crudeness. They take their personas off, they're still chaste ladies. And they are ladies, all of them, like... That's actually one nice thing about VTuber. They're all
of working age. They're all
not a bunch of teenagers, which is yay. People who can drink.
Yeah, this is why it's so good. But and that's the truth of Panty and Stocking. But, like, I think the other thing is it's just saying sex. Like, you see a lot of, I guess, sex on screen, but you don't really see sex, you don't really see him fuck, and B, like, they don't actually do anything with the sex. It's just there. It's just like having the word sex in the background, but then not actually doing anything with sex to make it an interesting thing to have as a central thesis.
It's very early, like, sitcom, like, it's just literally, like, the bang zoom straight to the moon. Mm. Like, it's just a catchphrase, except it's just her having sex with someone.
Like, she has a thing which she like, wants to have sex with 1,000 guys, which is great. Like, and I feel
good
that... Good for her. Yeah, exactly. I feel that, at the time, that was quite in, like, a less progressive 2010. I feel that that was maybe another sort of, like, shock comedy moment, but...
I don't think you can say that when one of your episodes is Sex in the Dayton City. Like, because, like, Sex in the City very much did that whole women... It's okay for women to be promiscuous and to have sex with as many men as they like.
But it was still,
but that's,
like,
a show for adults versus a cartoon
and
for
also
children.
Also, Sex in the City... It was less about having sex and more about having your gal team and your gal pals, and sort of, like, less about sexual awakening and, like, having someone to have, like loose free sex, and more about, because at the end of the day, Sarah Jessica Parker wanted to fuck and be with Mr. Big, which he does on and off through, like, 12 seasons and 3 movies. There's only one character, I believe, in Sex and the City that actually... Have you watched Sex and the City, Duncan?
Yes, it's Samantha you're trying to remember.
This, and now we're living in... What I was trying to say is we're now living in Brat Summer. You know,
it's not even the thing itself. It's just the air of transgressiveness that really like is what I feel has aged the most in 14 years for me, where like the idea that that this angel who's presumably thousands of years old goes to a high school and is like, oh boy, I can fuck every single boy in this high school. And it's just kind of like, yeah. Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
I guess. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the joke is, but I know that I can tell that there's a joke shaped thing there. But like, I don't know. Like, how often did any of us laugh at anything? I don't know. Maybe I'm showing my hand a bit too much. But like, I didn't laugh at a lot of the jokes, and
no.
A lot of times it was just kind of like, that is something that is framed as a joke. So I guess I will go ahead and concede the comedic beat. But
there were some chuckles from me. But I can't remember for the life of me what they were. And there'll probably be like either a sight gag or a slight like switch. Any sort of like change in the tone or switch in the characters, like that's what it was. Which is probably why I like got the most out of Scantian
knee socks.
Yeah. Because also I just like a dumb evil villain that is ineffective and useless. And yeah, they were quite good.
Yeah, I think Scanty and Knee Socks had like their best moment in the like the first like 2 minutes after they're introduced, though. Like when they're laying into Panty and Stocking, like Panty and Stocking, what a ridiculous set of names. Should be the proper rules.
Rules, yeah.
So we get this in the same sort of mood as the rest. Like the episode Andy was trying to remember earlier, Vomit Point, was directed by Osamu Kobayashi, who was known for doing Beck Mongolian Chopped Squad. God, I messed that up. Beck Mongolian Chop Squad and Paradise Kiss, which is just weird. God, that's a show of its time.
Emi Ishii worked on the ED for Paradise Kiss, I think, interesting. Right?
He's quite well known for having like done some really progressive animation early in his career, like doing sort of really avant-garde shorts. And so like that was just, he also worked on Kimono Zume. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's where Andy probably he recognized his style from, because that is, I think, where I also saw his style in those two things. And like I think he's sadly passed away back in 2021, so only 56 from as we've said many a times, but cancer. Another person gone too soon, who had a lot of creative juice left in him.
Yeah, but which and Kimono Zume was also had Masaki Urasa's in the credits as well. So I think I am thinking like strong Urasa.
But yeah, the art for Mongolian Chop Squad is just exactly like the sequence art from that. So that makes sense that it's a connection, at least.
The last episode, Bitch Girls. So there's a joke, the bit at the end where they form their secret power, and then like they fire a thing up to the sky, and then a real life legs.
Alanis Morissette comes in. Sorry, that's Dogma. But, it's the same kind of joke.
When was Dogma? Was like early 2000s, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2002, I think.
Yeah. Oh wow.
It's no, 99.
Wow, even earlier than that. Aging ourselves.
Yeah, I feel so old.
I ain't seen Dogma.
Good. It's not that great.
It's fine. It's a lot like this, where it's like what if angels were just like rude normal people who loved like sex and candy?
I mean, it's
and
Kevin
shit.
Smith, right? But,
yeah, the whole Jay and Silent Bob thing was just gross out humor like 10 years before this. Then it comes around again.
I don't know. I still rate Clerks. I still rate Clerks as a good thing.
Well, Clerks has an indie fire though.
Yeah,
I feel like by Dogma, like. I like Dogma, but it is just like someone gave Kevin Smith enough money that he could hire a bunch of funny actors to hang out with and film his script about what if Jason Lee decided to end the world.
I also quite like Chasing Amy. That's the other one. I haven't seen that one.
Sorry. You should not watch Chasing Amy. No. Just, speaking of things that the that progressiveness has not moved age. Far past what was impressively progressive at the time.
But also, talking about the porn tape bit, that was also a bit in Mallrats as well.
What other impulses? What other uniquely American things was this team at Gainax like consuming and wanting to like turn into an anime? Because I do get that, especially if you've just made something as like elemental and primal as Gurren Lagann. You're like, oh, we can do anything. We'll just every piece of like weird media we can pack it into our next anime, and we'll make it about angels who fuck.
You know, I never got into Gurren Lagann either. Let's not get into that. But there was a very interesting thing about and the extras of the DVD Blu-ray where they show how they did that final shot of a real life human like feet come down and stamp on the evil guy and close the door. And that was interesting. It was basically like they got an actress, Ayuri Yuzuki, in to be the bottom part with like her stockings and her like dress up, and then they shot that and like camera zoned it, and then they did the same thing in 3D, and all of that shot was in 3D. Then like the lasting moment of that director when they showed how it was done was like, we really wanted to draw the like to blur the lines between 3D and hand drawn, and a lot of what you think is hand drawn is actually 3D. There's a way more 3D in this anime than you realize. And I was like, yeah, that's good. Like, actually, that is a very impressive part of the anime, is that a lot of it did not, and it's because of its heavy stylization, a lot of it didn't sort of scream like lazy 3D.
Yeah. I mean, there were times, I feel like the volleyball episode was especially one where either the 3D or the budget or both was like really straining, and there was a lot of a lot of shortcuts being done, and man, was that. But like, yeah, I think that neither of you watched the OVA because it's not on Crunchyroll. Panty and Stocking with Sanitary Box. It's just a bunch of little shorts, a lot of them that are sequels to actual episodes. But the very last thing is like a dance thing where they just like unhook the rigged model, and it's just them doing like they're like fly away, but they're like just flopping around like like paper cutouts and stuff. And it does make you realize like, oh wow, this actually, even stuff that you did think was hand drawn art was in fact 3D. But also there are some times where I was watching the move, I'm like, this is 100% 3D, and like it's well disguised, especially for 2010, it's well disguised. But I do think that was an important cornerstone of the style.
Yeah, and that's that, like that fight in Les Diaboliques, the fight between them, like the demons and the angels, the Anarchy Sisters, it made me want to die. But like that fight was really well done, and that was like really good use of like effective CG. But it's all down to their like incredible stylization that is really like.
I honestly think the best CG was probably in the first episode for the Death Race 2010 section, just like going full Blues Brothers with as many cars as you can throw on screen and just weaving the camera between those at will.
No, I agree that that's probably the most visually stunning of the ones.
I don't know,
the bit
when the two cars are like going through the school and there's that glass flying into the face as it rips through the school.
That's
like,
true.
I really enjoyed that scene. I thought that was really cool.
I mean, I liked in general when they whistled for the cars and the car kind of like jankily, like bad 3D collision, like kind of like wedged its way up the stairs. Obviously, <Yes. laughs> there are like, it's said that was funnier to me than any other joke in the episode. It was just like watching the car just kind of like painstakingly cram its way up a school stairwell.
Talking about stuff that made me laugh, the one bit that did make me laugh quite regularly was when they had the monkey. The monkey lawyer, and they just kept doing like the hard-boiled cop like look, but he looked like Lupin. Like, that made me laugh a few times. Like every time they cut to that, I got a good chuckle out of that. So that was maybe the funniest episode, but not my favorite, because it was dumb.
Written by the world's smartest monkeys.
Yeah, really was. It was.
I do wonder how much of this is just we're in 2024 and this was so hyper specific to 2010.
No, like, I think a lot of the things it's pastiching are, but like hopefully a pastiche like transcends time. Like Evangelion is a pastiche of Ideon and the UFO TV series from the 70s.
I was trying to like think where we were like culturally in 2010 compared to now, and like in the UK at least we were on the basically about to enter a nice crushing period of decline, having basically come out of the 2008 crash, and
I think that matters.
I mean, it does, because it's what do you think, how do you feel the world's going to be, what are your expectations for the world, if you and Japan's in the middle of like second decade of stagflation, and here's America, 2010 America, Obama's elected the year before, and they're just bouncing back from the fucking crash like nothing. And so like part of me wonders is like at that time, like, did I think America was aspirational in a way which I just very much do not now? Like, looking do you not remember, like, all these Obama hope open and all that?
I mean, 2010s was the ACA, our painful abortive attempt to push through a decent healthcare reform. But it's hard not to look at it in hindsight. I do agree, like, with Duncan there, that it's hard not to be like, well, this amounted to nothing.
But also you're looking at it like from the Japanese perspective, America's always been cool. No matter where no matter what we are, like, I don't feel the general perception of America has changed that much in Japan. And I feel that we can't look at it through our lens as opposed to what the Japanese directors were thinking at the time. Very helpful.
But what's cool about America?
I don't know, because I don't think America's cool. But their freedom and let the Americans speak.
Yeah, I think freedom is the correct thing, because when I every interview I've read and a lot of stuff, just the idea that like, it's actually kind of funny, because when people ask me why I like anime, I'm like, oh, there's anime about everything. It's often extremely inventive. It's beholden to a completely set of tropes, different set of tropes and genres. But to hear these people talk about Powerpuff Girls and Gossip Girl and Glee and be like, you can make a TV show about anything in America, and we want to be inspired by that. And it's like, I mean, it's interesting that they saw like Powerpuff Girls, but they fucking shit. That's the beautiful, amazing, exciting frontier for a Japanese animator. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
What if we had a High School Musical where they sang actual musical songs and they were also in a glee club and they all were popular covers?
But I feel that, again, like a lot of anime is individualism, is uniqueness, is sort of freedom of thoughts and speech. Hmm. And that's something that Japan doesn't always have, or feel like they don't have. Like, there's a lot of, always when you're in Japan, there's talk about like unwritten rules and like rules. You know, what you should and shouldn't do. It's that sort of restrictive nature that I feel that a lot of anime is fighting against. So for Japan, that freedom that they see when they see someone go shit and fuck, smoke a blunt, and then like punch a cop in the face, like, they think that's cool because that's their freedom. Sure, there's repercussions, that cop's going to arrest them, and they're probably going to have to, no, they won't have to go for rehab for marijuana, but you know, like, the point is
maybe in 2010 you did, who knows?
Maybe. I was looking at the South Park's 2010 has the stuff about lampooning medical marijuana. Medical marijuana. And also has some of the greatest episodes. That's still a funny season. That is still a good season of South Park, season 14.
Oh, that's beyond
me. Would you say, Andy, like, Iyamashi is someone who is particularly transgressive, and it does sort of like go against the rules of animation more than the average animator? Like, compared to, say, like we would talk about him as an excellent director and Trigger as a studio which has a lot of is well known as quote unquote savior of anime, etc. and has a lot of style and panache to it. And then you compare it to something, let's say, like Koyaanis, which is an incredibly beautiful and on model style, which very, very, very rarely goes off model. Very rarely.
I feel that Gainax has its own visual style as well. That sure, it breaks style a couple of times from like panty and stocking, but the majority of it is like a very unique Gainax and Trigger style. I don't disagree with you with Kyoani being very now currently being very visually similar, but that's only because K-On was so fucking popular. Before that, you know, you look at Lucky Star, you would never thought that was a Kyoani animation. You look at Nichijou after that as well, like great anime, not Kyoani style at all.
That's what Dragon Maid is. Like Dragon Maid's Kyoani.
Yep, Dragon Maid's Kyoani.
And that to me fits the same thing. I don't think of that as going off model much.
My problem with Imaishi of his works, including like Promare, is that
yeah, I was wondering when Promare was going to come up.
He ramps up the action, but without any stakes ramping up themselves either. And the stakes,
I don't think you could say Kill la Kill or Thing Me Do don't ramp up the stakes.
Kill la Kill is the exception, because I do think Kill la Kill is very good. But like Promare is a pile of shit. It's bad anime.
Fair.
And I also don't like Gurren Lagann, which again is very heavily recommended. Like, oh, if you like Gurren Lagann, you'll have Promare, but like, and I feel it's Panting the Stocking Gutter Belt is kind of between, like, it's kind of similar in that, like, it just has action that you're meant to be impressed by, but you don't, like, the stakes are just not there or not interesting. I don't want to count Kill la Kill, because Kill la Kill is good and I enjoyed it. And it's not
it doesn't
even
fit in your thesis.
It doesn't fit my thesis, but also it feels like there's probably more than just him working on Kill la Kill. Like, did he write it as well? No, he didn't.
No. Kazuki Nakashima wrote it. You'll know the author of Oedo Rocket and the Nadame Cantabile finale.
I don't know. Like his directional style doesn't really do much to me.
I think my favorite thing that I like Luluko.
Yeah,
it was rough watching this also, because I was just like, I wish I was watching Inferno Cop or Space Patrol Luluko. I wish I was just watching them again instead of watching this. But like, he kind of like, especially because it seems like he wants to be less of Trigger's like lead face of direction. But it's just weird to watch him kind of like bounce around, and he'll light on good stuff if he has good collaborators, and if he doesn't have good collaborators, we get stuff like Promare. Or I was thinking about his 2015 Animator Expo Sex and Violence with Mach Speed, which is just we see it, it's one of the places they visit in Space Patrol Luluko, because that show is just like celebrating Imaishi's work as a sort of shopping arcade Abinobashi romp through realities. But like, that is just like, what if there was a like super violent like little shark cop man, and his like femme fatale girlfriend was a blow-up sex doll, and like a million cops shot at them? And it's just, it's the same, it's what I think he is at his core, is just like these like absurd stakes creating a very visually creative action sequence that you're kind of just, if you're not really into it, you're kind of just waiting for it to be over. And that's feels like a bad feeling to have when you're watching action. It's like, man, I can't wait for something else to happen. That is not what's happening here. Where I like his stuff, but I do think that he kind of struggles to hit the kind of substance that I want, even from madcap slapstick action. Like he did the opening credits for OKKO, a random like post Adventure Time American cartoon, and those are great. And that's just like a like 30-second music sequenced action sequence that's just like cool. And I don't have to like have a story, because other people will get to make the story and make me get to know these characters. And Imaishi can just focus on his like surreal, outrageous action, and more power to him. But
Quick question.
Yeah, I'm...
did you guys watch Premiere, or was it just me?
I watched a trailer after you trashed it and decided that I was happy taking your, opinion, so...
I mean, look, you guys watch it and tell
me... You're
going
to make us watch that next? Is that what's going to happen?
No, I'm not watching that shit again. No, Christ, no.
Well, then I think we're all sitting in a very nice glass house.
I do wonder if we would have not got Kill la Kill if Pantheon Stocking doesn't exist. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe
I don't think that's an incorrect opinion, because like Pantheon Stocking with Garter Belt was a big hit. It solidified the team that he built around Gurren Lagann, and then those people left the next year to form Trigger and went into pre-production with a Kill la Kill. So like there is a lineage. I mean, Inferno Cop was made in the meantime just to like keep them above the waterline while they were making Kill la Kill. But it's hard not to say that like this, but it's a technically challenging experimental anime, even though it's kind of just a gross out like Americanized action comedy. So I do think it probably required like a lot of people to pitch in, and it probably made it pretty clear like who you were going to invite to come with you to your new animation studio and who you did not invite because Jerry's lazy or whatever. So
Jerry is a lazy fucker. I don't know. They probably could have made something else. I don't think.
Classic speculative historiography of if Homer didn't write the Odyssey, someone else named Homer probably would have written it instead.
Yeah, they'll call it Trans Homer.
That's the joke best left in 2010.
I also wanted to point out, you said that the last episode is called. Bitch Girls, but no, there's two. Andy,
oh, you're right.
There's Bitch Girls, and then there's Bitch Girls 2, Bitch.
You're right.
Aren't you cracking up?
Yeah, I'm hilarious. I feel that, like, when they make the second season, I feel that this sort of, like, I feel that the comedy's not going to evolve behind the same boring shit that they did this time. Like, the same crudeness and gross and, like, insults and cool and... like not sex comedy, because it's not a comedy, and that's just, I don't even think it's sex, to be honest, but like
it's just raunchy, as yeah. I feel like is the best word for it, just kind of raunchy comedy.
But I feel that the at the time, like where we are now with like progressive, you know, sexualization and, you know, like no slut shaming stuff, and I feel that those jokes, if they don't evolve, they don't change something, is those jokes are gonna just die on their ass, and at least the Western audience isn't going to enjoy them at all. I feel the Japanese audience's mindset hasn't changed that much when it comes to sex and female rights, but
jeez. We'll have to see, because I do wonder if it's so clear that this came from like what these guys were watching in the past decade leading up to 2010. Mm-hmm. And if we get like the synthesis of what's happening with like American TV leading up to 2025.
Get ready for the Game of Thrones episode.
I don't know, but that's just me fooling myself. Like you're right that it's going to. Yeah, it's gonna resemble Pantheon Stocking the original more than it's gonna reference Rick and Morty, Adventure Time, and Game of Thrones. But yeah. Who knows? Maybe it does, because like I don't know, Imaishi works plenty with Western collaborators now, more so even than when he was working at Gainax in the 2000s. So I'm hopeful, but I saw as I was watching this, I'm like, God, I'm already tired of this. I can't believe that they're gonna make more of it. And granted, they leave it on a cliffhanger, a stupid. Like pointless, like lol. There's we claim it'll be resolved next season, but there's never going to be another season. That's the joke.
Yeah.
But now they've actually gone back and they're going to make a sequel season. And I don't care. I don't know these characters.
Yeah.
And maybe that's me being way too strict. And like we should probably end this episode with like all of us saying one nice thing about Panty and Stocking.
One last thing. I'm just going to reiterate. I really love the character designs. I really love them. Mm-hmm. I think they're really good. I think they're really evocative. I think they're really unique and like one of those again, what we're talking about great about Shin-chan as well. It's just like you see those characters, you get them instantly understandable, instantly recognizable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love them.
Yeah, I also love that 2010 was apparently the year of the pink and purple goth with chunky bangs, because that's like Friendship is Magic came out the same year, and it's just like, yep. The cute cuddly goth is becoming the standard.
And then also the underlayer of pink hair as well. Mm, uh-huh. Love it. Love that.
Yeah, you love those two tones.
Yes.
I had a fun argument with the dearly departed John about transformation sequences when inspired by this show, because a lot of typical transformation sequences is magical girls as characters are very chaste, very young, and then transformation sequences, often they are at least very beautiful about becoming more adult and as time has gone by, whether we like it or not, transformation sequences have become more and more interested in following those curves of them bodies. And so it's kind of interesting, like, they've, instead of starting with someone who's young and wanting to become an adult, they've started with an adult. It's the opposite of what we're sold with magical girls, which is, oh, you transform into this beautiful thing and then you become sexy and older. And whereas it's most of the time when they're just following their id and doing whatever the fuck they want, that they're just these little chibi gremlins.
Yeah.
Again, like, I fucking hate to mention that fucking Chuck episode, but like,
you love it. It's your favorite.
You see from the opening of the Chuck episode is that they are just normal humans, because you see them through his eyes and they're just the traditional anime style. Actually, I hate that transformation sequence initially, and I think it still does bother me, because for a show that's trying to like usurp like social, like normal anime norms, to then have this transformation sequence, which is just their normal anime style, like, really annoys me, because I'd like to see the anime look like that constantly and not just have these one like 50 second snippet as an absolute banging tune comes through.
It's just noticeable every time the more they want, whenever like Stocking gets trapped up in the tentacles or bound up by the tail of a rat and a Red Riding Hood, like, whenever they are like caught in a compromising situation which would show nudity, it becomes more realistic. So at least it's 100% honest about where its priorities lie.
All I know is that my girlfriend was shocked at the transformation sequence the first time and then got used to it. And then when the demon sisters showed up and had an even more like explicit, where she's like bending down and peeking through her legs while pulling her panties off, and she was like shocked. She's like, oh, wow. And I'm like, well, they're the evil ones. Of course they have the sexier transformation. Yeah. And she's like, but isn't like the whole thing that all panty does is have sex all the time? And it's like, yeah. It's not very coherent, but...
And also their swimsuits are way sexier as well.
Yeah.
Which then, again, from the person who's meant to be very sexually forward, was like, why are you wearing something very bold? It's like, why would that bother you? Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
weird anime prudishness, just popped out for a little bit.
I mean, the relationship between the angels and the demons is just hypocrisy back and forth between, like, they're all true. Criticizing each other for the exact things the other ones are doing. So that's perfectly in character for me, at least.
Yeah. Also, another positive thing, the music. That opening soundtrack, that open is great. The transformation music's great. The ending is a vibe. It doesn't do it as much as the opening does. I would skip that, but yeah.
It's a good cooldown, though.
It's a good cooldown. Yeah, like...
It cracks me up that the section on the like music release is longer than the section on the anime that the music is in on the Wikipedia page.
Doesn't surprise me. Because
it's got the track listing for the two album releases they did, which I guess there's this much. Oh, one of them's a remix album. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Jeez, Teddy Lloyd.
Looks very much like one of those shows where there's more tracks than there was actually in the show on the soundtrack system, which is a very another American vibe, like, but that's more of an early late 80s early 90s golden age of movie soundtrack vibe, where you had Batman and
the whole Prince soundtrack. That well, my favorite thing that I haven't brought up yet is I like that they blew up a puppet at the end of every single episode.
Yeah, no, okay, that was good. Yeah, that those puppets
probably my genuine favorite thing, just because like I like mixed media animation. Mm-hmm. I loved the determination of just there's always a puppet, even when like there's not really a like adversary at the end. They still like blow up the guy that they beat, and then when they do the recap episode midway through, which is part of the slowdown in the quality of the show, like they just show every single puppet they've blown up as mm-hmm. part of the recap, and it's just like good for them.
A bit that made me laugh was when Gutterbelt died and they had his puppet blow up, and then when he came back to life they reversed it. That was a good bit.
Okay, that did get a laugh. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some better anime next time. Mm-hmm. We will be talking about the wrap-up of the summer anime season. There's been some good stuff. There's been some yep. disappointing shitpost comedies that I've at least kept watching.
I have.
We'll talk about those too.
I've dropped off a little bit, but I'll be back on them. There's also been some good shitpost comedies as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's been highs and lows as opposed to how it might be.
And I'm looking forward to now not having to watch 2010 shitpost anime.
Lots of great stuff. Lots of great stuff. We had a mm-hmm. Monogatari, also good.
Mm. We can't talk about that on this tween. That'll be another tween.
No, we can't. Can't cross the tweens. Anyway, rate and subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. Email us questions, keyframespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, or X, as they call it now. Keyframes Pod.
No, I don't call it that.
Find us. What?
I don't call it that.
Mess up my flow, bro. Find us on Facebook. Search for Keyframes Podcast. And most of all, tell a friend.
But not just any friend, Ben. I would tell the person who has recently been slut-shaming people for having too much sex. Maybe about 1,000 guys. They think that like that's a disgusting, gross thing. Like, you should say no. You should listen to this podcast and realize why you're wrong, and then not watch an anime that is 15 years old.
There'll be less swearing too on this podcast, even though I swear way too fucking much.
Almost certain in the fucking doodly. Man. Fuck shit.
Okay, well, say goodbye, bitches.
Yeah, fuck you all. Burn in hell.
Goodbye, bitches.
'Cause like I felt that at the time of recording Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack, Johnny Bravo, all those sort of shows, none of them had any real character development. They all were just same note and they just ended on a joke.
Yeah, well, it's the sort of thing where now the stereotype for American cartoons is that they seem to be episodic and then they grow a huge epic webcomic plot out of them. But in the meantime, with Panty and Stocking, like, yes, we get Garterbelt's backstory, but like we never learn anything about either of the girls. The Panty living on a farm is a fake out, and so it's just like, I don't know. I hope that they will try to like integrate more of the developments, and that this won't just be another time capsule from 2010 airdropped into 2025. But we will see.
Yeah,
when we'll still be making this podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. I am not happy about being replaced by an AI, but if it replaces me having to watch Panty and Stocking, then I am okay with being replaced.
But I wonder do you think that continuation, like the change in Western cartoons, because especially like, you're right, the stuff with say Gravity Falls, I think is a good example. Mm-hmm. But even mm-hmm. like where there is story and stuff, where there's like a bit of a, from my understanding, a rug pull, where it's like all those random things in episode season one actually has like deep meaning. But I never know because I couldn't get through season one because it was just a lot of fucking nothing. But, you know, like, did that come from the like Western comic book Cartoon Network creators watching anime, watching the popularity of Airbender and being like, maybe we should start doing that.
I mean, I think that the idea that comics could be a vehicle for heavy serialization and the sort of classic lighthearted adventure comedy turns into dramatic, like, character-driven action, I think that part of that does come from an environment where, like, serialization in cartoons is so much more common in Japan, and it wasn't necessarily someone watching Evangelion and being like, oh, we can tell stories with our American cartoons, but it definitely built an environment where I guess the feeling was that the audiences would be more open to being able to tune in every week to get a story going on, because the whole thing with cartoons is like the idea that they're kids watching them, and kids can't be relied on to come in every week and follow a story. And so the change in the media landscape that accompanied structural business stuff, but also just like what was seen as feasible or profitable for a corporation to do when it's making animation. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, for every Adventure Time, there was always still a Gumball, I guess.
Yeah, right? That's true.
And Adventure Time was the only one I ever really gave a fuck about. And even now, I don't think I even finished it.
That's too bad. It's got a pretty good finale, at least.
I hear.
But that was much more, like, the first four seasons are meant to be episodic, and then they just bolted a plot on there and managed to draw everything together. And so it's a much more messy, organic thing than Gravity Falls or one of its contemporaries, where I do think, like, there was a plan from the beginning, and the episodic nature of the first season is entirely a fake-out.
I mean, I can't speak for Wood Adventure Time, but there's definitely always been some lore, L-O-R-E, based stuff, which has always been there. And I feel like the Princess Bubblegum Marceline has always been there. The fact that it's an old destroyed world and this is our new world has always been there since episode one. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, like the more episodic nature of those things before you get like Heat Signature, that's the first like episode where it's like, okay, this is really fucking good. I love Heat Signature.
Really?
Heat Signature makes me cry.
Anyway, we're just talking about Adventure Time now. Let's move on.
Yeah, maybe I should watch Adventure Time. Maybe we should make that our next tween.
Buy some weed and smoke a bowl every night and watch Adventure Time until you fall asleep. That's the way it's meant
that's
to be consumed.
What about that one that he made, which is explicitly like about just getting high?
Oh, Midnight Gospel stuff as you're thinking of?
Yeah.
That's also good, although that's literally just one of the guys who used to work with Joe Rogan, his interview podcast, and they just set episodes to animation of them doing, which is a cool thing.
I liked it.